Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm joined on the podcast today by Isabel Cañas, author of the novel Vampires of El Norte. National Public Radio said about Vampires of El Norte, at once romance, horror, historical fiction, and an adventure narrative about war, Vampires of El Norte elegantly navigates a multiplicity of genres to deliver an engaging story that cements Cañas as one of the best new voices bridging the gap between romance and speculative fiction. The Hacienda was great, but Vampires of El Norte is even better. Isabel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
If someone hasn't yet heard about your novel, Vampires of El Norte, how would you describe the novel?
Vampires of El Norte is, I guess you could pitch it as a supernatural Western, if you will. It's set in 1846 in what is now South Texas, but was then Northern Mexico, but not for long because the Mexican-American War happened. And it's about two young people who are childhood sweethearts, Nena and Nestor. And when they're 13, a tragedy occurs. Something attacks Nena in the middle of the night, and the two are separated for 9 years. And they're thrown together again on the road to war and have to navigate their past, the problems that they have with one another in the present, and in doing so must work together to defend their home, their rancho, from threats both human and supernatural. And the supernatural, of course, being the vampires of the title.
Do you remember the initial idea or impetus that led you to writing the novel?
Yes, actually, it was, I had the idea for a vampire novel first. So that's what came to me initially. And I pitched it to my publisher when we were selling the Hacienda. So the Hacienda was purchased in a two-book deal. And with the understanding that my second book would be a vampire-y situation. Now, this was my first book that I ever wrote on contract. So it was a bit of a journey. So I pitched basically the idea that I had to my editor, and she was like, yeah, nah. Which goes to show that, like, even once you're past, like, the querying stage, the submission stage, you can still get rejections, because sometimes the idea you have isn't exactly what your publisher is looking for. So I went back to the drawing board, and the two elements of my initial idea that my editor had honed in on were, one, there was one character who really worked, who was really interesting to her. It was interesting to me, and I think that's shown through the pages that I sent her. And his name was Nestor, and he was a vaquero. And two, he had this family history of being from South Texas, which is where my family is from, where they've been from for generations, and is a very complicated little pocket of the world because the border has moved around. And in the 1840s, when this character was, you know, walking around and living, the border moved over him. And so he had this complicated relationship with his identity as a Mexican, as an American. And my editor was like, that is interesting. That is gold. And so that's what I went back to the drawing board with, was for the first time, I was almost given permission in a way to write about my family's history in this area of the country. And it was really freeing to suddenly be told by a publisher, like, this is valuable. This is worthy of notice. Because, like, all my life, being a Latina in publishing, there's this tricky, like, tightrope that you have to walk between, you know, for lack of a better word, being exotic or being too exotic. Or, you know, it's weird. It's a weird little pocket to kind of occupy where I've received rejections in the past that are like, this book isn't Mexican enough. And then other rejections that are like, nah, this book is too Mexican. And so to suddenly be told by my publisher, no, we want to hear about where your family's from, was incredibly freeing. And once I started to write, I couldn't stop. Like, the first draft just poured out of me. The setting was so vivid. The characters came to life so easily. The plot is another question that had to be workshopped quite a lot over the course of the next, like, I don't know how long it took to write, like a year, 18 months roundabout. But yeah, that was the genesis of this book.
What was the, not necessarily the issue, but what did you have to kind of edit and refine about the plot as you were working on this project?
So Vampires of El Norte is a book that spans multiple genres, and it has a lot going on. There's war, there's romance, there's monsters in the dark. And initially, I had a further speculative element that wove through the story. And there was just too much going on, you know? It was very difficult to wrangle. It was the characters didn't have enough room to breathe because I was trying to cram in all of this material. And so I found once I took out that other speculative element, there was a bit of like magic-y witchcraft situation going on. Mm-hmm. Once I took that out and allowed the vampires to be at the forefront of the speculative part of the novel, everything started to click into place.
Can you tell us about your original writing journey that led you to writing and getting your first short stories published and then your first novel, The Hacienda, published?
Yeah, absolutely. So I began writing when I was really young. I think like many writers, we all have memories of starting really, really young. I remember dictating old stories to my older sister before I could write, like when I was 4 years old. I have like one specific vivid memory of doing that. And she's still my sounding board for many of my ideas. So shout out to her. But I began writing Lord of the Rings fan fiction when I was like 13. And I quickly moved into writing original fiction, albeit deeply derivative original fiction, when I was in high school. I was in a writing workshop at Brown University when I was 17. I was doing like a high schooler summer program where I was in actual college classes with actual college kids. And I was like, ooh, 17 and like super wowed. And I was interested in writing fantasy. That was and has always been my bread and butter. I love, love, love the speculative in my fiction. And the instructor was really critical of this, like profoundly critical. So much so that she mocked me in front of the class, which was as a 17-year-old in front of like, you know, an entire class of university students. I was mortified because the idea was that I was supposed to write literary fiction and literary fiction does not have any speculative in it. Naturally, that is not true, but that's what this instructor was like trying to hammer home. And
sure.
I felt like all of a sudden I didn't know how to write because I wasn't interested in writing fiction without any element of the speculative. And so for, I think it was like 4 years after that, I actually didn't write fiction, which just goes to show how powerful I think instructors can be on young people. And so I'm very passionate about that issue in general. But I wrote a lot of poetry when I was in university, which I think has influenced my prose. I journaled quite a lot. And it wasn't until I entered grad school that I started writing novels again. And I think I have a lot to owe to my then boyfriend, now husband, because he was really encouraging when it came to me talking about different novel ideas that were had speculative elements in them. I started writing my first novel and I created a Google Doc and shared it with him. And every week he would nag me for the next chapter and nag me for the next chapter and nag me for the next chapter, which helped me finish like the first draft of my first novel. And I think that is where my journey really began, because it's only by finishing that we learn how to actually do the thing. I think we can begin, and I'm still so guilty of this, we can begin a 1001 projects, but it's not until we actually start to finish them that we learn anything about what a novel is supposed to look like, because then the real work of revising begins, which is for me, the real hard work. But I queried briefly in 2017. I entered a contest that is now defunct, unfortunately, called Pitch Wars, where I was mentored and my writing was part of an agent showcase. I did not technically get my agent through this contest, but I queried her immediately after and she snapped me up. I love her. She's fantastic. And we went on submission with 2 young adult fantasy novels over the course of the next 2 or 3 years and received just a lot of rejection. A lot of rejection. I think young adult fantasy was then a difficult market to break into. It continues to be very difficult because the writing isn't on the wall, so to speak, but there's a lot of contraction and weird stuff going on in the kid lit market right now. I reached a point where I'd received so many rejections over the course of 2018 and 2019. That I knew I had to pivot. I had to try something different because what I was doing wasn't working. And I remember receiving a particularly heartbreaking rejection on a revise and resubmit that I'd spent like 6 months on when I was on my honeymoon in Mexico City in late 2019. And my husband, who is the leading man of the hero of the story, I guess, he gave me a pep talk, like his classic, like, let's get back in the saddle kind of pep talk after a rejection, because he is by now very familiar with the rejection meltdown song and dance routine. But he said, okay, you have these two other ideas that you want to work on. You got that rejection. Let's get back in the saddle. You had that adult fantasy idea, or you had this like little haunted house idea that you've been playing with. Which do you want to do? You know, November's coming up. I love NaNoWriMo. He knows that. He calls it NaNoCrimo because I always have meltdowns like towards the end of it. And I said, you know what? Let's try the horror. I'd written short stories that were horror, especially historical horror, but I had not written a novel. And so I had a whack at it. And a year later, it sold at auction. So that was cool. It was a long journey. And I started writing short stories when I was at Clarion West in 2018, which is a science fiction fantasy writers workshop. It's based here in Seattle. And I had written one short story before that. It was the story that I submitted as a part of my application and got me in and got me a scholarship. So that was pretty cool. But then I suddenly found myself in this room with 17 other insanely talented writers and with the task of workshopping for 3 or 4 hours every single day and also writing a short story a week. I'm very deadline motivated. I thrive when it comes to deadlines, but that was pushing it. That was really difficult because suddenly I found myself, trying to shove novels. The first week I remember I tried to shove a novel idea into a short story and that failed. And I learned very quickly that short stories are a completely different discipline. One that requires a very different skill set. I've continued to write short stories since then. Not many. I'd say in the last year or so, I've really fallen off the horse. But they, I think, really force me to flex muscles that, and exercise muscles that contribute to my longer fiction and are essential to my longer fiction. Because I have, as evidenced by Vampires of El Norte, I have really sprawling ideas. I have big ideas. I love novels that are cinematic, that have history, where characters walk onto the page having history with one another or having large families. And so in order to communicate those things very quickly in ways that don't get in the way of the broader plot of the book, you have to be swift, you have to be vivid, and you gotta get in and get out quick. And that's what the short story has taught me, especially flash fiction, actually. But yeah, that's a rambling journey through my writing experience thus far.
With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do you remember your first short story acceptance?
I do. It's called The Weight of 1,000 Needles. It was that short story that I wrote that got me into Clarion West. And it sold to Lightspeed Magazine in, I think it was fall of 2018. It was right after the workshop. And I just remember my jaw hitting the floor because I'd had a writing instructor at Clarion West, actually, with whom I did not jive. And they had looked at this story and said, this is overwritten. Basically, like, this is not good writing. And I was like, at that point, you know, I'd done the whole, like, mean instructor rodeo before 10 years mm-hmm. previous. And I was like, okay, everybody has different tastes. That's fine. Also, screw you. I'm just not going to take that advice. And I turned around and figured, you know, I'm not going to touch it. I'm not going to change anything. I'm just going to try submitting it somewhere. And it sold like a hole in one. That was the first time I submitted it. So wow. That was extremely cool because in the short story world, like rejections are very normal. And I get many, many, many of them over. I've gotten bajillions over the last few years, but that was a hole in one. And it was that was my first published story.
And it also shows you how publishing is so subjective.
There's so much in this industry, both on the short story and the novel side, that is dictated by taste. Exactly. And it's not just your taste, it's your editor's taste, their boss's taste, their boss's boss's taste. So it's really interesting. It's really interesting. And fickle
what's overwritten
frustrating.
For one person, what's overwritten for one person is another person's unique writing voice.
Exactly. Or what's spare for one person is incredibly vivid to another. It just goes to show that critique is very important. I think what's even more important is knowing when to accept or leave a criticism or a critique. Because at the end of the day, you know your story best and you know what is going to best serve what you're trying to do.
You told us about this one instructor at Clarion West that you did not particularly align with. Can you tell us about the rest of your Clarion West experience and who,
yes.
who were some of your teachers during that experience?
So I had Karen Lord, who just had a novel come out this year. She's incredible. Who else? Daniel Abraham, who's part of the duo who writes the Expanse novels. He was fantastic. Who else do we have? Ellen Datlow, who's a famous horror editor. She's great. Mm-hmm. A big personality. And one thing I found at Clarion West is that the instructors were important, but I learned the most from my cohort. The instructors kind of guided us, and they had, I'd say like after every critique session, sometimes there would be like, you know, a mini lecture, a craft issue, on a craft issue or something that had cropped up over the critique session. Like we were talking about endings. We would then have a chat about endings and how to nail them or how to set them up correctly. But I learned the most from my fellow students. We were all very different. We all came from different backgrounds, different writing backgrounds, different writing practices. Some people wrote a lot of science fiction. Some people wrote exclusively fantasy. Some people wrote fabulous, slipstream kind of literary work. And it was a combination of being exposed to that writing and thinking critically about it in ways that would be constructive and helpful to the author. And also having them with their different backgrounds critique my work. That was the real gem of Clarion West. That was my takeaway. I think that taught me more than my instructors. They were fantastic across the board. They were all very good instructors, even if I think all of us had different relationships with them. And maybe like one didn't click with me, but she definitely clicked with others. One didn't click with other students, but clicked with me. You know, it's so much about workshop experiences is about the personalities involved and the people involved. And I'm very grateful that my cohort, we've kept in touch, some of us quite closely over the years, and they were fantastic.
Can you tell us about your writing process for novels? Are you someone who writes an extensive outline or plot before you write the first sentence, or do you just have a vague idea and kind of dive into the narrative? How does that work for you?
Oh, I am a big outliner, sir. I have spreadsheets upon spreadsheets. I follow beat sheets. But the more that I've thought about it and the more that I've started to work to demystify my process and improve it, the more I realize that I am a bit more of a pantser than I originally thought. What I do is when I have an initial idea, I kind of like nurse it for a while. I kick it around. I have a document where I just write down everything that I know about the idea. And when that document becomes meaty enough, or I find the voice that I want to lead the story, I begin to look at what I used to do is I would use Lisa Kron's Story Genius and use that to flesh out my character. I don't really do that anymore. I found that book, while it's great, is really good for crafting like one particular kind of character arc. And for me, there are other character arcs I want to explore. So I've left that behind. But what I do is I start working on the character. And then at the same time, I start looking at the Save the Cat, Writes a Novel beats. I have found that I like a particular kind of like cinematic, end of the bang kind of book. And so what better way to craft a cinematic piece of work and then to use cinematic beats? And I found that that has guided me quite well over the years. The Hacienda was the first book I used Save the Cat with, and that kind of went well. So if it ain't broke, I guess.
Sure.
At that point, what I do with the beat sheet is I start just brainstorming stuff to fit the beats. Because usually when I have an idea, I have like, okay, well, I have this opening. I know what happens in the middle. I don't know what happens at the end. Or I know what happens at the end, but I don't know what happens in the middle. And so with the beat sheet, what I'm able to do is look at the book from a bird's eye view and say, okay, well, if this is going to happen at the end, what then must happen before it to make the ending possible? And then I start to like stitch together from the beginning and the end and stitch into the middle. And from that bird's eye view, I'm able to troubleshoot problems before they happen, which is helpful for me because I'm a deeply impatient writer and I hate it when I write myself into a corner when I'm actually drafting. So I do like to budget some time for troubleshooting before I actually begin to draft. But then once I begin to draft, I usually have I have those beats. I have like an idea for, okay, this is where the chapters will break. This is what happens at the very beginning. And then there's kind of this wild expanse between, let's say, the 25% point in the end. Maybe there's like a flurry of stuff that I know at the middle, at the midpoint when there's a big turn. But there's just kind of like tumbleweeds. And so, but I know because of the beat sheet that like at X percent, this needs to happen. At Y percent, something like this should be happening. The tension should be going through the roof. And so because I have those goalposts, I feel free to freestyle a little bit and pants, if you will.
Sure.
Because I know that the goalpost that I'm gunning for, like that's a solid place that I can stop, reassess, figure out what I need to do next, and then move forward. So I'm a big believer in outlining ahead of time. I'm a big believer in what I call a zero draft, where I write stage directions to myself, so to speak, where before I write a chapter, I have maybe 500 words to maybe 1,000 words of material where I say like, and then Beatrice enters the hacienda. She sees this. She turns here. She does this. She says this. The lighting is such. The vibes are such. And when I have that in front of me, I'm never afraid of the blank page. Because it's there. You know, there's stuff on the page already. I don't have to be scared.
Sure.
I'm not going in blind. I know exactly what I need to do, and then I do it.
Are there writers that you admire and may have inspired you along your own path as a writer?
Absolutely. I really admire the writing of Lainey Taylor, who is a YA fantasy novelist. She is best known for Strange the Dreamer, which is, I think, my favorite novel of all time. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous meditation on if reconciliation is possible after a war, which is a very timely topic, I think. And
sure,
it's absolutely, it's lush, it's beautiful. And it's one of those books where you begin reading it and it just sucks you in because the voice is on point. And it absolutely just lures you in with that like little curled finger of a storyteller, like, come hither, come hither. And before you know it, you're 50 pages in and you're like, whoa, what year is it? And it also is one of those books that breaks rule. I have studied it because I'm a big believer in studying the books you love to figure out what makes them tick. And one thing that Lainey Taylor does is she front loads a bunch of backstory and a bunch of character backstory. And in the first like 100 pages, like not a lot happens. You're just kind of following the character backstory of one of the main characters. And it works. For whatever reason, it works. And I haven't figured out like the secret sauce that she puts in her stuff. It's a lot of hard work. I know that. But I love her work. I also really admire Sylvia Moreno Garcia. She blasted the doors open for speculative works by Latina writers. I think she's done an incredible job with doing whatever the hell she wants with her career, which I admire deeply. She jumps from genre to genre. She writes noir, she writes sci-fi, she writes fantasy, she writes horror, of course. Mexican Gothic is her best known book. And she writes a mean short story. Like, her short stories are fantastic. And I admire that, because I'm one of those people where I will never be, I don't think I would ever have a fulfilling career stuck in one genre. I have ideas that run the gamut in terms of genre. And she's shown that, you know, another Mexican writer can do that. Publishing will allow that, which is, it's very freeing to see that and inspiring to know.
What writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels?
Finish, finish, finish. That's my advice. And it's honestly my advice to myself. I'm staring down the last quarter of the year, or the last few months of the year at this point, with three half partially finished projects. And I will not be happy until they are all finished. Two are on contract and one is not, but I know that I need to finish them. So do as I say and do as I do. We're going to finish them all together.
That's good advice. Are you working on another novel now?
I'm working on two novels at the moment. They're both on contract and I'm not allowed to say anything else, but sure. I think they are spiritually very much the sisters of the Hacienda and Vampires of El Norte, in that they deal with Mexican history, they deal with the Gothic. I would call them, in fact, insufferably Gothic. They are just dripping in atmosphere and hauntings and things that go bump in the dark. It's a little more romance than the other, but I think those are the three things that I would point out to potential readers of my work. Like, if you like this, then dive right in, sir. The horror, the romance, and the history. So we have those aplenty in our future work, you know, but I can't say much else.
What books, fiction or nonfiction, have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Ooh, so I recently read Victor Laval's Lone Women. That's horror. It's set in 1910s in Montana, and it's one of my favorite monster tales that I've ever read. It's brilliantly written. I'm currently reading a young adult fantasy called Divine Rivals by Rebecca Ross that blew up on TikTok. And I was like, what's the big idea? Usually TikTok books don't land for me. This one is exquisitely written. It's beautiful. I think what I'm going to end up studying about it is how powerful the emotions are. It swept me away. I was up very late reading it. Like, I was feeding my baby at like 11 o'clock at night reading, and the baby fell asleep on me and I just kept reading for another half hour. That's how good it is. And love a book like that.
That's a good endorsement.
Yeah, exactly. I would say Lone Women and Divine Rivals.
Where can people find you online if they would like to learn more about you or your short stories and novels?
Yeah, I would go to isabelcanas.com, isabelcanas.com. I have all my short fiction there. I have my newsletter linked there. I most often haunt Instagram. I'm currently on hiatus because I also got to finish so many things by the end of the year. But it's in the tumult that is social media these days. Instagram is where I can most reliably be found. Instagram and my newsletter.
Sure. Well, again, thanks. Again, we've been speaking to Isabel Cañas, author of the novel Vampires of El Norte. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Isabel, thanks so much for doing this interview.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I have one last question, which I had forgot to ask earlier. So yeah. Have you sent copies of your two novels to the instructor at Brown?
No, I've tried to find her on the internet and I can't track her down. But you know what? One day.
Yes, you should do that. Okay, great. Thanks a lot for doing this interview.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Wonderful.